Well, good morning.
Morning, Corey.
Thanks, guys. All right. Well, I want us to just take some time and think through what life after college, what faithfulness in our walk with the Lord looks like after college. And for some of you, this is a fairly immediate concern. You know, you're either graduating or maybe you already know that college hasn't been a great fit, and so you're looking at life after college pretty quickly. For some of you, this might be 3, 4, 5, 10 years down the road. And so, but now is the time to be thinking about these things. We set ourselves on the trajectory for these things now. One of the things that's amazing about college is the fact that it kind of works as an incubator in so many different areas of your life. Obviously, in preparation for a career, you're learning things now. You have learned things over the last 4 years in a compacted space, right, that are going to set you up for things you're going to do for the next 40-something years, 50 years, 60 years, for the rest of your life. And in the same way, spiritually, there are things you can do now in college that will prepare you for the rest of your life. Now, again, some of you are staring graduation in the face in this next week, and so you're thinking, well, that's great. I finally find out that I was supposed to be maximizing college. And so just know that you have been doing that, and in ways that you've maybe not done that as well as you would like to have done it. There's time now to think about what that'll look like next. And for those of you that are you know, again, years from that, now is the time to even be setting yourself on a trajectory towards these goals. And so I want to talk about faithfulness in a series of areas. Okay, so faithfulness when it comes to church, when it comes to your personal ministry, right? When it comes to being on mission. I want to talk about what faithfulness looks like in your disciplines and devotion to the Lord. Okay, we need to talk about relationships and all different stripes in your career. And I'm actually going to wait to kind of tackle that last one at the end, and because I think all of those other things dovetail into how we do that part well. And although sometimes when we're thinking about life after college, that's our primary focus, is what's my career? How am I going to pay the bills, right? But we'll get to that here in just a second. I want to start with church, right? Faithfulness in the life of a believer in college, out of college, post-college, even pre-college, has a lot to do with your connection with the body. The expectation throughout the New Testament is that as believers, we are attached to a local body. And even when we look at passages like 1 Corinthians 12 and the expectation that we're working as members of the body, yes, in a lot of ways, those cover like global church elements, right? But Paul's writing that to a specific church at a specific time. Right? And the expectation for us is that we are a part of specific churches and specific places, that we devote our time to those things, right? And so the expectation for you, life after college, is that you are going to be an active member of a local body of Christians. Let me start by telling you that University Baptist Church is only here in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So on one end, let me encourage you to stay. To consider what you're looking for life after college is that you would stay here, that you would find a job here in Northwest Arkansas, that you would continue to develop and in relationships here in this body, that you would embed yourself here, and that you would allow what God has already done in your time here in college and how He's expanded your faithfulness to the Lord through this body, that you would even allow that to shape where you would end up. But also remember that UBC is only here, right? And so as you're looking at where the Lord would take you and your faithfulness to follow Him to that next destination, you're going to look to follow Him in a local church, and that church will not be UBC. And that is exactly what it's supposed to be, right? Some of you maybe struggled with this your freshman year, your sophomore year. If you grew up in a great church, right? I often have to remind freshmen when they get here that church is great, but that church is there. And the songs that they sing and the people that are there and the way they do life and all of that, that is their faithfulness in that location. But it's not there. We're here, right? That's the same attitude you're going to need to take when you move back home, when you move to a new city, is that you're looking for a church that has centered itself on the Word of God, on the gospel that we preach here, right? Not because it's exclusive to us, but because it's faithful to the text, right? And so you're looking for the churches that are doing that, the churches that are going to invest in you, but more than that, not sticking with a consumeristic approach, right? But that are going to be the opportunity for you to minister within the body and outside the body. And then you're just going to be faithful. You're going to jump in and be faithful. I encourage you, whenever you move to a new town, that you've already done the research before you move to that town. Maybe even before you consider what town that you're moving to, that you've already done research on churches you want to be a part of. Like, here's this crazy idea. What if where you choose to take a job is based off the body that you're going to be involved in, right, that you're going to be a member of, more than it's on the job itself? Whether that is because you know of an incredibly faithful church and you would love to be in that place, whether, as we talk here in just a minute, about being on mission, it's part of you deciding, you know what, there's a church planner that our church is connected with. There's a church planner that's connected with networks that we're connected with. And I'm going to go and be a part of that church. And they're in Seattle. They're in Kansas City. They're in Norman, Oklahoma. They're in wherever. And I want to be a part of that. And so I'm headed there. And I'll figure out how to find a job in that location. Some of you guys have careers, have studied in ways that put you into career options that you absolutely can do that. Honestly, the vast majority of you can do that. You're not bound to only find one job in one place, right? But that you can take that career and place it wherever the Lord would put you, in a body where you can be faithful. But that body's going to be different than ours, right? And it's going to have its own set of wrinkles and its own set of warts, just like UBC does. And sometimes you can be so in love with what God has been doing in your life through this body that it can be hard to jump in to the next one. And what that ends up causing you to do is it causes you to delay jumping into a body. It causes you to be skeptical of other bodies, right? It begins to elevate your own opinion of your own understanding of how church is supposed to work, right? And that elevation of your pride and that absence from the body are two really bad combinations to come together that lead to faithlessness, right? So instead, as you are looking to jump in, yes, it's good for you to maybe try a couple churches. But better yet, it's even that you've already tried a couple churches long before you get to that city, so that you're ready to jump into a space that you know preaches the gospel, that you know is going to invest in you, that you know is going to hold you accountable, that's going to give you opportunities to do ministry, right? And you're going to jump in and serve alongside them. Membership is kind of raising your hand and saying, hey, I'm in. I believe that Jesus Christ is my only Lord and Savior. I believe that this body is important. I want you to hold me accountable, and I want to be a part of investing in others as well. You raising that hand, they should examine you, look for that faithfulness, and then they're going to hold you to that, and they're going to pour into you, and they're going to expect you to pour into them. All right? And so membership is an important thing that you should look for as you lead to be faithful after college, right? And when you look at that church, it should be the primary place that you look to do ministry, right? And so I want you to be faithful as a minister, as a disciple maker in life after college. And so that means leveraging the giftedness that God has given you, right? Each of you are uniquely not only designed, but then gifted, and then with unique experiences and approaches, right? And God has done that for the sake of this body while you're here, and for the sake of that body when you get there, right? And so just some things that even just as a young professional, as college students, that you bring to this body or that you'll bring to that one are things like flexibility. There's a flexibility that you guys have that will benefit every single church that you jump into, whether it's a young church plant that absolutely needs someone who can give that kind of time and energy and flexibility. There's a willingness that you can bring to a church. Man, that gives so much to a body when you're just willing to follow the lead of those elders and pastors, whether it's just a willingness to do what it takes to serve others, right? That willingness breathes life into a body. And you guys can bring that energy, that excitement, right? In ways that there's an excitement about where you're going, what you're doing, right? Maybe it's the lack of a children at home that are up in the middle of night or other responsibilities, right? Those are some unique ways that you can pump energy into a body. Even just the fact that you bring questions, right? That you bring the need to grow and mature is an incredible asset to the body. I spent a lot of time trying to convince churches in college towns and outside of college towns that investing in college ministry helps their entire body because it means that there are going to be older, more mature believers who are going to get to pour in to college students and young professionals, right? And they're growing because they're helping you grow, right? And so even that you come with questions, that you come wanting to grow, that's an asset that you're bringing to that body. You're expecting that body to grow as disciple makers, right? That you're not just going to the senior pastor. I want access to that guy. I need access to that leader, right? But instead that you are seeing that the whole body has an opportunity to disciple you and to grow you. And so you're looking to build those relationships and bring those questions, whether it's a formalized space like a Sunday school class or a life group or a home group or a cluster guild or whatever they've decided to call it, right, in their space. But instead, or it's just the informal spaces where you're building a relationship and you're looking to have people walk through life with you. Let me encourage you to be faithful on mission, right? So even as you're looking for a church, look at what they're doing in the community. Look at how they're reaching out, right? There will be lots of spaces in your life where, well, throughout life, it is very tempting to slip back into a consumer mindset, even in the Christian walk, where I need my needs met, right? I have these felt needs. And so we begin to think of churches, well, I don't feel like I'm being fed. I don't feel like I'm experiencing worship. I don't feel like I'm being led. All these felt needs. And often, let's be honest, there are only so many itches that the gathering of the local body is intended to scratch in your life. And so if you're looking for what we're about to hear from the Word, from Ryan, from the worship we're going to join in together congregationally, from this space, if you're looking for that to feed you completely, to scratch that itch of I need more spiritual growth, right, it will never satisfy, and it's not designed to, right? So I will talk here in just a minute about where your own personal spiritual disciplines will look like, right? But I do want you to be thinking beyond just a consumer mindset. And in points of transition is where we are most likely to slip back into a consumer mindset, right? When everything else in our world seems to be uncertain or chaotic or dismal, hopeless, whatever else, right? When there are categories of that in our life, we are quick to fall back into a space where we can just consume. Right, where it can be just about me, right? And if you've grown up in the church and you've spent a lot of time in churches to this point in your life, especially if it's a larger church, there's a good chance that there was somebody on staff who was your, like, children's minister. Like, they were dedicated just to reach you as a child. And then there was a middle school minister, and then there was a high school minister, and now you've come here and we have a college minister, right? And so there has been somebody dedicated to pour into your sliver of life, right? And one of the things, despite the fact that we have those things here at our church, we also work really hard to help you integrate into the rest of the body, because for the vast, vast majority of churches, that's not going to happen again, right? Some much larger churches might have a young adults pastor or a young pros or a singles pastor or something else like that. They may have an adult education or a discipleship pastor, but for the most part, you're jumping in with the rest of the body. And we want you to have already done that, right? So if you're a freshman looking longer into before graduation, long before you get to that life after college space, then now is the time to be integrating into the rest of the body so it's not a shock to your system when you get into that space. But it's also an intentional choice that you're going to make in that point of transition, that you're not going to fall back into a consumeristic, where's my minister? Where's my person who's pouring into me? Why doesn't it fit what I wanted? You can't fall back into that pattern. Instead, you've got to be thinking, how can I get into a space where I'm others-focused, right? Where I'm concerned about the needs of others in a Philippians 2 kind of way. And one of the ways that you do that is by intentionally being on mission. And so as you look to the church you're going to be involved in, look at how they are going to intentionally push you out of that consumeristic mindset and out into ministry, right? When you go through the membership process, are they talking about how you're going to get plugged into children's ministry, right? Are they talking about how you can go with them in the prison ministry that they're involved in, and how they're working in an apartment complex south of town, how they're going down the road or across the state or to the ends of the earth? Are they going to give you those opportunities to be on mission and to push you, aggressively push you out of that consumeristic mindset? Because otherwise, it's easy to fall back into that. And maybe even like the craziest version of this would, for me, to really challenge you wherever you are in the spectrum towards life after college, to be thinking, what if for the first 2 years after college, I was very much on mission? Like, what if you took those 2 years post-college and you intentionally went and took whatever job you could get in Seattle so you could work with a church plant, right? Putting yourself on mission to be in a space where they need you to come to be not you-focused, right? Or to sign up with the International Mission Board and to go as a journeyman and spend 2 years overseas doing some pretty incredible stuff that maybe only you can have because you bring those things we talked about that you bring to a body, that flexibility and willingness and energy and excitement and even the growing, like the need to grow, right? You bring that overseas, right? So maybe you need to come on staff with the Baptist Collegiate Ministry. Send me a resume after college. We're not always hiring, but when we have, we'd love to talk to you, right? Maybe that's a good fit. But what would it look like for you to give those 2 years to be on mission after college? Because those may not be 2 years you can ever pull together again, right? Where you can say, for the next 2 years, nothing else matters, right? Me on mission with the Lord, that's what I'm doing, right? Where you're not tied to a career, where you're not tied maybe to family or to other expectations, where you can really maximize that flexibility. And here's the crazy thing. Like, a lot of you will spend the next 2 years outside of your career, outside of an active choice of yours. Like, it may be hard for you to find the exact job that you're looking for. The job that you might take right out of college may not be the one that you end up pursuing. It may not even be close to what you want to pursue in your career, right? And so if that's a possibility for a good chunk of you, like, why would you not use those 2 years, right, to do something else? Because even as you take another job, life after college, part of you is trusting that if it takes 2, 5, 10 years to finally get into that track towards that career, towards what God will have for you, right, you're trusting Him that it'll be there. And so take a minute to trust me as I trust the Lord that it will be there. That career, that option will be there, even if you spend the next 2 years after graduation on the other side of the plant talking to people about Jesus, or in a major city doing whatever it takes to pay your rent so you can talk to people about Jesus, right? Or staying here in Fayetteville, maybe where you don't feel like you have all the opportunities for your career, but you know you can invest in this body, right? And that you can grow on mission for the next 2 years and trust the Lord with that. And we'll even talk a little bit more when we wrap towards career options that you think about. What does it look like to build collateral towards your ultimate career option anyway? So to do all of that, you need to be growing in your disciplines. And two areas I want you to think about when it comes to disciplines and devotions is one, your personal spiritual disciplines. All right? So going into a space where there's tons of transition or it's going to require you to be thinking that you're going to need to lean into your relationship with the Lord. You're going to need to lean into His Word. You're going to need to lean into prayer. You're going to need to grow in fasting, in evangelism, right? And those personal spiritual disciplines. Because otherwise it will be easy for that space to feel like a desert, right? As you go through that transition. So the expectation ahead of time, even as you're looking at this summer, like maybe you're a freshman finishing out your first year, but you're headed into the summer, right? It'd be really easy for this summer to be a desert space for you, whether you're graduating or not. It'd be really easy because you're going to be out of your rhythms. You're going to be away from this body. You're going to be away from the brothers and sisters in Christ who have walked faithfully with you, right? You're out of that school rhythm where you've kind of gotten used to wherever it is that you get into the Word, right, throughout your day. And that transition has the opportunity to derail you. Instead, be thinking as you're looking for this summer, like, okay, what are my spiritual goals? What scriptures am I going to memorize? How am I going to get to spend extra time in the Word this summer that I don't usually in school because my schedule is different? Maybe this summer you're working an internship and you're going to commute this summer, something that's not a normal part of your day here on campus, right? And so you're going to strategically leverage that commute to listen to scripture, to listen to podcasts, right? To catch back up on UBC sermons while you're away, whatever that might be. But you're intentionally thinking, how am I going to fill that space with my personal spiritual disciplines to grow? The other discipline I think it's really important is that you're already thinking about how you're going to leverage the finances God is going to entrust to you to steward those things well towards God's glory. There's a great quote from Rockefeller that said, if I hadn't tithed on my first check, I wouldn't have tithed on my last one. You know, the richest man probably that ever walked the planet, outside of maybe some that are currently, said, if I hadn't been willing to give when I didn't have a whole lot, then it would not have seemed worth it to give when I did have a whole lot, right? And here's the crazy thing to think about. If you're about to graduate and take a job, you're about to get the largest percentage raise you will ever receive in your life, right? Because exponentially, zero to whatever is phenomenal, okay? As you continue to promote, as you continue you will receive raises, and some of them may be, by God's grace, significant, right? But percentage-wise, it'll never be what it's about to be. And so whatever it is, the plan from the beginning is that you're faithfully giving to the Lord. So that's that church you're going to be a part of, right? That you see that as the primary place where you grow in your spiritual growth, that you grow in your ministry, right? That you grow in your spiritual disciplines, that you give financially to mission, right? Maybe it also means that you need to write a check to the Baptist Collegiate Ministry and just send it 944 West Maple. Just put that on a monthly check that comes our way, right? But you're investing back into that. Those people that have invested into you, and then that you're faithfully recognizing that the Lord is going to be asking you to do things in the future in ministry, and so you're not going to derail those opportunities by decisions that you make early on, right? So the decisions that you make now have a disproportionate amount of impact later, so on the positive and on the negative. So on the positive end, right? If you start putting money in savings, as you start putting money towards into a retirement account, the money that you put in a retirement account when you're 22 is worth so much more than the money that you put in a retirement account at 27, at 32, whatever else, right? And so you can YouTube that and find those crazy videos about how you can put in a retirement account for the next 5 years, right, faithfully, and then stop, and you'll have more money than if you waited 10 years and gave more It's crazy. So, all right, so that's a financial decision to make when you're 22 that gives you opportunity to be faithful later as God calls you to do things, right? On the negative end, like, debt will continue to derail faithfulness in some big ways, right? So if you already have school debt, right, so often a necessity to get through school, then be thinking at graduation, how am I going to use a significant chunk of this money, this huge pay raise I just got, right, to pay off school debt, right? Because you get out of school debt, it gets you all sorts of opportunities to go on mission. Let's say 5 years from now, through the faith, through your growing faithfulness in your church and on mission, you really feel like God's calling you to move to Seattle to work with that church plant, to move overseas to work with that people group that you've been investing in on short-term trips for a while. But you can't get out of the $30,000 you're still in debt from school or that sweet car that you bought right out of graduation, right? You can't get out from underneath that. Well, that's just going to delay that opportunity to be faithful, right? So the decisions that you make now are going to affect that. So get out from underneath those things. Open up those opportunities, right? And then be thinking about how you're going to invest in relationships. So loneliness is an epidemic on college campuses. And many of you have experienced that. You may even currently be experiencing that. And we want to walk through that with you. Bad news. So college is one of the last friend factories of your life. So it's one of the last spaces where you and thousands of other people come to the same place at the same time, all looking to make friends. Okay? So, what does that mean? It means you have to be way more intentional with friendships, life after college, than you've had to be even life in college. And again, that may sound crazy, especially if friendships has been hard for you in college. And I don't mean to say that to just be a huge bummer, but instead to give you that perspective, the expectation that friendships post-college require work, right? And the good things in life require work, okay? And so whether that is, whether that's peer-to-peer friendships, whether that's mentorship, right? Whether that's romantic relationships, whether that's in marriage, right? Whether that's you mentoring others, all of those will take work. And you need to embrace that. You need to embrace that now as a freshman, as a sophomore, as someone who's 5 days from graduation. You need to embrace the fact that relationships will take work. And so you're going to have to put yourself out there, right? And to our introverts in the room, trust the Lord with that, okay? Trust the Lord with what it takes to make those kind of friendships, to pursue people and don't wait for them to pursue you, right? So we're not coming with a consumeristic mindset, right, that's expecting us to be fed and us to come to us, but instead we're looking to engage others. And the reality is because loneliness is an epidemic in our culture, specifically on our campus, right? It is just the same when you leave when you leave college, when you get into that career space, right? And so you're looking to engage with people not only because you know the downfalls of you continuing to be lonely, you know the dangers by that, but you also recognize that in others. You recognize that they need your friendship as much as you need their friendship, right? And so you're putting others before yourself, even as that becomes self-serving. So you're engaging those. And three kinds of friendships I would encourage you. My wife reminded me of this as we were talking the other day. And that you need to have Barnabas's in your life, you need to have Silas's in your life, and you need to have Timothy's in your life. So you need to have, so in Paul's life, he had men who came alongside him, who called him out, who poured into him, right, who served alongside him, those Barnabas mentor people in your life. You need to be looking for spaces to engage with mentors, whether that's in your career, right, or whether that absolutely is in your personal spiritual growth and your faithfulness, right? You need Silas's. You need those kinds of brothers and sisters in Christ who will be in jail with you singing hymns to the Lord, right? Who will be in the hardships with you, and those require work to develop those and maintain those, right? But you need those. Don't think that you can, that just the generalness of the body will be enough, right? But the the specific relationships we have with brothers and sisters, right? It's a beautiful word that's repeated over and over and over again. The family is that a brother and sister, right? And the closeness, the knittedness that that requires, right? And then you need Timothys, right? You need to be looking for spaces to be investing in others, to be discipling others. Discipleship is one believer helping another believer become more like Christ, right? So this is not an expectation that you are the all-wise guru, right? Who knows all things and can answer all questions. Instead, it's recognizing that you have a maturity that would allow you to help someone who's just a little behind you catch up to the next step, right? It's not your job to get them from 0 to 100. It's your job to get them from 9 to 10, right? To invest in someone else's life to help them grow that next step in their faith, right? And you've got to believe that that's not like a mystical, mysterious, a difficult process. The expectation for you leaving college and going into life as a believer, faithful after college, is that you have the opportunity to invest in somebody else. Here's what happens with a lot of believers, even here in UBC. If I were to go to the vast majority of our 40-year-olds who are faithful here at our church, right, and I would ask them, you're still faithful in your 40s. Was there someone who ever invested, mentored you, right? And the vast majority of them would probably say that, yeah, sometime between 16 and 26, they had a mentor, someone who just walked through life with them. And then if I said, well, why aren't you, have you ever done that? And they would say, no, I just never felt ready or qualified, or I couldn't do that. And I'm like, well, okay, how old was that person who invested in you? Whenever, oh, they were probably 26. 20, you know, 28. Okay. So, but they were a super Christian. They were awesome. And it's like, okay, so what you're telling me is that a 26-year-old could invest in a 22-year-old or a 20-year-old, right, because they were a super Christian, and you gave them a 14-year head start, and you still feel like you can do it at 40, right? But it's the lie that says, nah, I'm never going to be able to catch up to that guy. I'm never going to be able to catch up and be that kind of investor, that mentor, that disciple maker. And that's just not true. All of you have the capacity, as you are following Christ, to invest in the life of someone else who is also seeking to follow Christ, right? And as someone has done that to you, right, in a 2 Timothy 2:2 kind of way, look for those opportunities for you to do that with someone else. For some of you, the best space in the world for you to do that is just to faithfully hang out with 2-year-olds, right? And not only invest in those 2-year-olds, but invest in their families. And the fact that you are caring for them in this next hour means that mom and dad are in the other room getting to be invested into, right? You're playing that part within the body, right? But it also might be that you get to that town, you need to go hang out on a college campus because you just left a college campus. You still kind of look like a college student, right? And you need to hang out with college students and help them ask and answer the questions that you've been asking and getting answers from for the last couple years. Finally, as you look at your career, right? Your career, right, comes at the end of this list because it doesn't shape the rest of these. The rest of these shape the decisions that you make about your career, right? There's a trust and a faithfulness, right? So not only that you are faithful to do the things God has called you, but you are faith-filled. You are filled with the faith and you're trusting God to work all things together for good, right? That the career he calls you to will not, should grow these other areas, should assist these other areas. It should not be a detriment to these other areas, right? So if the only way forward for you in your career is that you can't go to church on Sundays, you're probably taking the wrong tack to move forward in that career, and you're maybe picking the wrong career, right? If the only way forward for you in your career is for you to neglect your Barnabas or your Silas or your Timothy or your family, you're probably picking the wrong tack, right? You're probably picking the wrong direction to take for that career. And it's also a lack of faith that God can use you and will use you whether you advance in your chosen career or not, right? I have a civil engineering degree, okay? And this is what I do for a living right here. I hang out with college students and talk about Jesus all the time, right? I know that the Lord has used those years of study and that degree in incredible ways, in ways I had no way of knowing that he was going to use them, right, in my present position. But if you had asked me 12 years ago, what am I most likely to be doing, this wouldn't have been it, right? But faithfulness and trust in the Lord that he will shape that and guide that is most directed when you are faithful in church, when you are faithful in ministry, when you are faithful in mission, when you are faithful in your spiritual disciplines, when you are faithful with your relationships. All that's going to make sense as you're faithful in your career. So we're going to take a little bit of time. I think Trey's going to come up, Hayes going to come up, and we're going to just answer questions that I clearly left unanswered, right? Or maybe specific to your kind of focus, whether that is, again, with graduation just a week or two down the line, or years and years down the line. So how can we help you guys prepare for life after college?
Andreezy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the question was, what resources are given to students other than just Googling churches in an area? That is, if they move away to a different area and they've got to find a healthy church. What are other resources?
Some networks that we associate with on the big scale, we're a Southern Baptist church, which is has a huge breadth of churches that are associated with us all across the country and around the world, right? And so that's a good place to start. We're also associated with a Nine Marks ministry. It's a certain kind of philosophy of ministry that dovetails well within what we believe. And so that's another network where you can get on their website and search in an area and find good churches, right? We connect well with the Gospel Coalition, and they do a good job of listing churches of different stripes that are worth looking into. I think you also want to leverage relationship to get there, and so whether that's just talking to Trey and myself, talking with the other pastors here, the relationships that we have in lots of other spaces would give all sorts of opportunities to find a church. And then we even talked about like the craziness of like choosing a church first and then finding a career that fits into that space. And so that might be it's someone that you're reading, someone that you're listening to, someone that we recommend, especially if it means it's on like a beginning church, you know? You're not going to be podcasting any of our church planners, but man, would they be an awesome space to jump into. And so we would recommend that. And then I think you spend a lot of time praying about it.
Yeah, so you can go to 9marks.org. You can go to, what's the SBC site? Just Southern Baptist Convention, look on there.
Yeah.
And look up church search. Mm-hmm. Same thing for 9marks. Same thing for the Gospel Coalition. You just go on those sites, put in church search, and then that'll help out. But I agree. One of the most helpful ways is just word of mouth. It's just talking to us or anybody else that's been in those areas or knows people in those areas and just helping you to find the church there. All right. Katrina.
How do you get connected with other college ministries if you're not from a certain place and don't really know anybody there?
So how do you get connected to other college ministries if you're not from a certain place or don't know anybody else that's there? That's the question. So if you move away, okay, got it.
This is life after college?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would, if you were a part of a college ministry, whether that, you know, BCM or CRU or clearly here, like there are maybe some natural connections already there. I would love it if more like graduates from other schools called and said, hey, I took a job with Walmart and I'm going to be in your area. Could I mentor some of your students? I was part of a BCM back home. Man, I would treasure every one of those phone calls. And so I think you start with, again, with a relationship you already had. And then you might just have to put yourself out there a little bit and say you're willing and available. And then look for that opportunity with your church, with the church that you become a part of.
Pearson Wade.
Do you have any wisdom about not just like getting to the new place, but also like the act of leaving the place you're at? Whether that be
so wisdom on getting to a, not necessarily getting to the new place, but yeah. Leaving the place that you're currently at. How to leave well.
Yeah.
I've never left, so I can't answer this question.
I think communicate with the people who have been in leadership over you, and I think that's important so that you don't just disappear and no one knows that you moved. I think as well, if you've been a part of any kind of smaller groups within the body, like a life group, or this is like our Sunday school class. I think it's good to communicate with the people who you've been close with in the body and explain what you're doing and why, and even ask for them to pray with you for that transition. So part of what can be a joyous thing for us as a church that invests a lot in college students is that we get to send you out to other places where we know that you can be a blessing there, but we want to be able to pray with you for you to go. So if you don't tell us you're leaving, we can't pray for that. And then also we might be wondering in 3 months, we haven't seen Pearson in a while. Where has he been? So it's just good to communicate. And I think that's part of how you can leave on good terms. And we don't assume it's for any kind of negative reason that you left.
Only thing that I would add would be write a letter of gratitude to the church for the ways that the church has impacted you and has been helpful in discipling you and raising you up, equipping you. And so it doesn't have to be super long. It can be a half a page, whatever. But just write a letter to the church in gratitude when you leave so that we could potentially read those on a Sunday night. Because that encourages the church when you do that. And I think, yeah, in one, it kind of sets the precedent for the body as the body leaves. Like when people throughout, no matter what age they are, and they leave, they're kind of like, oh, well, that's just kind of a normal thing that they were doing. And they were grateful, and they looked for ways that God had used people in their life to impact them. And I think that's a great encouragement to the body when you do that. And it encourages your soul to be able to do it as well, because you look back and you reflect on how people impacted your life. So that's what I would encourage for any seniors right now that are about to leave. Please consider doing that. You don't have to do that. It's not like a mandate or anything, but just consider doing that. Because it encourages the body. I think the body is built up and edified by that.
That's good.
So Chan Man.
On graduation.
Everybody's got a nickname.
Of course.
On graduation, let's say someone foresees like church leadership, maybe not a senior pastor role, but maybe like music ministry or eldership. What would be some scenarios where seminary training might be beneficial, or it may be better just to be actively discipled in the church and be raised up through that?
Okay, so scenarios where seminary training could be necessary to go, but then also on the church side, just staying within the church and being raised up to be an elder within the church. Yeah, so that's the question, is whether or not to go or to stay and just be raised up within the church. How to discern that? Okay, got it. All right. Want to think about this?
I think that I think seminary is incredibly helpful. I think if you're thinking about going overseas, one of the things we do in the American church is that we often under-prepare our missionaries. It's this weird thought process that says, if we're going to send somebody to Fayetteville, Arkansas, we're going to require them to have 4 years of seminary training. And if Brad has a question about a text that he's working on, there are six other people in his office who also have an MDiv. And within walking distance, there are a dozen more. But then we're going to send somebody to the other side of the planet where we're hoping that what we really trained you well in your college Bible study is enough to answer whatever questions you're going to answer for a people group that has never heard the Bible. So if you're going to spend time overseas, I highly, highly recommend good theological training. Now, there's lots of different ways to do that. And I think do not do it in a way that divorces you from the local body. And so, again, if the speed at which you feel like you need to go through seminary keeps you from being invested in the body, you're probably doing it wrong. Remember, because that's career was at the bottom. I'm a proponent of if you've got the flexibility and you've got the we can create
those
relationships.
These are two different. So understand, these were two very different scenarios in going into seminary, right?
Yeah, you and I went to
completely different routes in going through seminary.
Yeah, so I stayed here. I started at Southern Seminary because they had an extension here in Northwest Arkansas. Finished all of my MDiv. It's an enormous, crazy degree. While still here, they flew professors to me for a while, and then I went to them for a little bit and took some classes online. And then Trey moved to Louisville with his wife, and they invested in there for 3 years, and then but invested well into a church to begin with. So things I lost from my experience was that I was really isolated from my classmates and my professors in a lot of ways, and so having access to those. To those professors day in and day out, that's not just an email, was something that I didn't have. And my classmates were not even in my town. They were spread out all over. And so I didn't have that kind of that process where iron is sharpening iron, not only that you're being poured into, but that you're kind of bumping up against other people. I lost that in my approach. But Trey can talk about like some of the downsides to his approach too.
Yeah, so... I mean, yeah, the upside in going is the fact that you have people to dialogue with regularly, mm-hmm. right? So constantly in dialogue with people through stuff.
Yeah. And you guys know this in your undergrads. The vast majority of your undergrad experience is outside of the classroom, right? What you learn and how you own that material is done outside the classroom, not just inside the classroom, right? Seminary would be the same way.
Yeah, in no way are we saying that seminary is absolutely, it's not mandatory that you go to seminary to be a pastor or to be an elder. As a matter of fact, I think that most of the stuff that we can give you, most of the stuff that a seminary can provide to you, I think we could pretty much give to you. Like if you want books on whatever, we can pretty much look at every single category and know exactly what you need to get, and we can triage it all for you. Because we've been there, we've done that, we know the stuff, the people that are writing and all that stuff. So I think that we can help you in that. So I think I would say... Maybe, and it's all depending upon the person and where they're at, but for the most part, I think we probably lean a little more towards staying, investing in a local church, because I think long-term, you're going to benefit probably more from that, in that you know what it looks like to be just a healthy member of a local church, to be in a healthy church, to disciple and be discipled, sit under the preaching of God's word regularly. That is going to benefit you more than having to go somewhere else that, you know, maybe doesn't necessarily have that there for you. And so I would say we probably lean a little more that way, though we're not necessarily set in one way or the other. But, yeah, I mean, I think there are certain scenarios where you would want to go to seminary or need to get seminary training, like Cole said, and getting on the field. Or if you're wanting to be a pastor, I would suggest and probably strongly urge that you do get seminary trainings, particularly even with languages and getting in the text and wrestling with the text and knowing exactly what the text is saying in order to be able to preach the text week in and week out. That's the biggie, I think, that seminary provides. And so...
Yeah, I think if you're looking for seminary, seminary will not provide you everything you need to know how to elder or lead or be a pastor. But it will. It's intended to provide things that a local church typically cannot. So we don't do Greek classes or Hebrew classes. We do some church history, but it's not exhaustive. Like, there are things that we can do on, towards all those ends, but we can't do it. But if you're looking to seminary to be the end-all, be-all, it will fail you. And so.
Is that helpful at all?
That's great.
Yeah.
I think it's, I know that whenever I was, when I was 22 and Caroline and I were looking at going overseas with IMB, and we were kind of looking at the hoops that we needed to jump through, that's how we saw them. That was kind of a misguided way for us to have viewed that. And by God's grace, he gave us great training and prepared us well. But it would have been really easy for me to just, like, felt like, I got to get there now, and not have been as well prepared to do the job that I was signing up to do as I could have been.
So I read an article of yours a few weeks ago, about specifically from freshman to sophomore year.
The sophomore slump.
Where freshman year is like consumeristic, like all the way, like how do we make sure, well, one, what are some ways that you see people are discouraged? And then, like, how can we practically, like, turn around and make sure that we're giving with, like, a glad heart and not being, like, bitter about it?
So, practical ways from freshman to sophomore year that they can give and put out with a glad heart within the local church and on campus.
Okay. So the article she's talking about was when I wrote for the Collegiate Collective on what's called the sophomore slump. It's a phenomenon that happens for people who have awesome freshman years, and then they get into their sophomore year and things will change. Like, we can't tell you how sophomore year is going to be different than freshman year. We can only tell you that it will be different. And so you just need to be prepared that it will be different. And every year in college is different than the year before. And so it's just as likely that your junior to senior year will see as much change as your freshman to sophomore year. But by the time you're a junior or a senior, you've prepared yourself that it will be different. So you handle that change differently than you do as a sophomore, where the only thing you have to compare it against is your freshman year. And there are some other things that are inherent to the freshman year that can set you up poorly for that. And one of those is the consumeristic, because everything feels like it's geared towards you, right? And so my encouragement to avoid it is, one, to know that it will be different. Like, friendships will change. People that you're super close with right now, you may not be close with next year. They may not be here next year. They may just be in a different dorm or apartment or whatever else, and those relationships just change. And so embrace that and continue to look for ways to build new relationships. Don't just expect to improve on the ones you already have, right? And then know that you will grow best as a disciple maker as you invest in others. And pouring into incoming freshmen is an incredible way to do that as a sophomore. The reason you had an awesome freshman year is a gift from the Lord, and because someone intentionally, like, reached out to you, brought you in, invested in you, and that's why you had an awesome freshman year. And it's your opportunity to do that for somebody else, because they're going to need it just as much as you did. And so, and then also trust that God will grow you more because you're pouring out than he even did this whole year as you were primarily poured into. And so he will continue to pour into you, right? But you get to have that extra added stream of growth that comes from pouring out as well. And so embrace that. Embrace what God's going to do in the difficulty of that.
Kent.
How do you know when you're ready how do you know when you're ready to be in that position when you're 26 years old and discipling into 21 year olds?
I think you're ready.
I mean, in some sense, since you're a Christ follower, everybody is commanded to make disciples. You know, in one sense, you're ready.
Yeah.
And I think you've just got to be transparent with them with various things that you're struggling with, various things that they're struggling with. Because if discipleship is just doing spiritual good to one another, well, then in some sense, we're all, like anybody that I would disciple, they're also, in some sense, doing spiritual good to me. Because they're reminding me of things, and they're helping to sharpen me, holding me accountable. Because if I'm sitting here talking to them about these things, well, I need to be sure that, you know, that I'm, you know, pursuing holiness just as much as they are. And so, now, I do think there may be some times where you have to kind of step away a little bit, you know, just to try to focus on a couple of things where you need to be poured into a little bit more. But I still think that even in those seasons, you can still chat with others and help them even think through, hey, this is what I'm going through, and this is kind of how I'm working through it. I've got somebody that's pouring into me, and, you know, I think these things can help you all as well and to prevent you all from falling into those similar traps through those similar traps. So I think for the most part, because you keep it fairly broad if your definition of discipleship is that way. It's fairly broad, and I think that you can do spiritual good to anybody in any season of life that you're in, so long as you have the right perspective about it.
I would also say that if you're a growing Christian, whatever you are growing in, you can do with someone else. So one of the women here who has mentored me through periodically, if she wants to grow in something, she'll read that book with me, and together we'll grow in that area. So you don't have to necessarily be fully arrived in a certain spiritual discipline to grow in that with someone else. So it's just taking someone else along with you as you're doing it.
I think one of the key attributes we all want to be growing in as believers, and most specifically as disciple makers, is humility. And there is a prideful perspective that says, I need to be at a certain level to be able to pour into others. That comes whether you ever feel like you achieve it or if you do feel like you achieve it. And you're like, man, I'm here. And I've hit that level, and now I can pour into somebody else. You actually need to kill that benchmark and trust in the humility that, no, you're always going to be like a broken, redeemed sinner who's seeking to, you know, one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread. And so, yeah, you can do it. You're ready.
But not to the point where you feel like you can't decide.
Yeah. I think... So that's meant to be an encouragement, like humility in the sense that, like, yeah, you're always gonna disciple others imperfectly. That's always, you're never gonna become the perfect disciple maker. Only Christ is a perfect disciple maker. And so when you embrace that humbly, then you also can recognize, even as you see your own faults, that God can still use those, and you're gonna work to like correct those. But they aren't going to be the reason that you say, well, I can't, I've not achieved enough. I've not works-based my way to a certain level to be able to pour into somebody else.
That's part of the beauty with when Christ says to make disciples, he's not giving you a bunch of qualifications right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not like you got to be an extrovert, introvert, or PhD, or whatever.
Yeah, as someone who's not going to have a lot of say in where I'm going to live in the future, what do I do if there's not a healthy church?
Not a healthy church in the area.
Should I go to the crazy, charismatic Pentecostal church that's 5 minutes on the road? Or should I go to the healthy church that's an hour and a half away?
Military?
Yeah.
So the question is, like, what do we do when we have less control over where we're located and the faithfulness? Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, one, it's going to require more research, right? More work, especially, I mean, if you end up on a base someplace else, that may be really hard. You may not have control over who your chaplain is or what kind of background they come from, what kind of profession they have. And so that's where those other areas, like those personal spiritual disciplines, those relationships, those things that you've built now will care for those things in the future. I think there's a measure of degrees, in that I would not encourage you to only podcast UBC and say, well, that's still my church. I'm still because remember that like it sets up two things. One, it says that UBC is the perfect church, and we're not, and then so that no other church will substitute. And two, it pushes you back to that consumeristic mindset where you're just looking for your way to pour in. So. And if I had to choose between a great church an hour away and a not-so-great church that preaches the gospel 5 minutes away, well, some of that's dependent on your city. So those of you that grew up in the DFW area, you know that driving an hour across town, that's just what you do to go to your favorite movie theater Like, you can invest in those spaces across town, and you do that for everything else. And so that may be a cultural norm if you're in a large city. It may be a, like, that would not be the same case if we drove to Fort Smith, because that was the only, like, that's not a cultural norm for us to travel back and forth for those. And so if it's a cultural norm for you to travel that far, yeah, do it. If it's not, then I think you invest in a body close. And you, you know, if you can see the wrinkles more easily, then you guard those in your own space, in your personal disciplines, and you even press into them a little bit appropriately with unity to help that body grow. Trey, totally disagree with me?
No. I mean, it just depends on what the church is like in your the place that you're on base at. Okay, so for instance, if there is a, depending upon what the church situation is like, if they have the gospel, you know, then I think, you know, no matter what kind of stripe it is, so long as you've got the gospel, that's there and it's going to be preached, I think that's the most important thing. But if there just isn't anything and you're in a place where it's just desolate, then if it were me, I'm picking up my family and going an hour. And I'm taking that drive in order to hear the gospel preached week in and week out. But I also have a responsibility also to my family, not only just to myself, but even just for yourself. That's what I would probably do. If there isn't a gospel preaching church in that area of any kind of stripe, any kind of denomination, that's what I would say. That's the most important thing, because more than likely that's going to be a temporary place for you, and. Yeah, that's what I would say.